Now can we turn please to 2 Timothy chapter number 3, verse number 15. And that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. And the book of the Acts please, in chapter number 18. And reading just a part of verse number 26. They took him unto them and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. Now the Lord will bless his word. Speaking about oneself, about myself, isn't something I particularly like to do, but I just want this evening to very briefly lay out exactly how eventually I found the assembly. I think probably you will see that that is a good verb to use, that I found the assembly in the little village of Kilmacombe, probably well known to nobody present here, but the little village of Kilmacombe in Renfrewshire. Now, my parents were believers, and that's why from 2 Timothy I read that little verse, that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. I was very young when I was saved. I was 8 years of age. And I can remember very clearly one Wednesday evening, and I'll explain in a few moments why I remember it was a Wednesday evening. One Wednesday evening, just alone in the little room that I had, having a real childlike desire to have this matter settled because I had heard the gospel. And I can remember taking a Bible that was in the room and writing in not particularly good handwriting and with no knowledge at all of what should be capital letters, "Lord, I want to be saved." And many years later, my wife and I, at least I found that Bible in our loft again, and I still have it today, with those childlike spidery letters written all over that page. At least I have it today if my wife hasn't thrown it out. Because if a thing in our house sits for 5 minutes and doesn't move, it usually finds itself being recycled. But nevertheless, we did. I was saved when I was 8 years of age. My parents were believers. And they worked near the village of Bridge of Weir in Renfrewshire at a place which is known or is known in the locality as Quarriers Homes. It was an orphanage that was brought into being by one William Quarrier, who was a Baptist, and he worked very much in the same principle as George Muller. And he had, it's a long story, I won't go into Quarrier's story. Suffice to say, it was there, and it's a village where there were 43 so-called cottages, but each of which, when my parents went, had about 35 children in them. And it had its own farm, its own tradesmen of various kinds, and it had its own church. And when Quarrier built the church, he called it Mount Zion. And in my early days, it was there. The gospel was preached there in these days. And it was what would be, I suppose, called nowadays a kind of interdenominational thing. But as the years went on, the minister who was there was one Tom Houston. And he left in 1959 to go to Africa. But before that time, or just before that time, the church became part of the Church of Scotland. So I was inducted, I can remember it well, into the Church of Scotland. I was also christened when I was about 6 weeks old, and I have on my birth certificate, which I lost, but we found a couple of weeks ago in my wife's car because I'd left it there, I have a big stamp on it telling me that I was baptized, and I was 6 weeks old. I won't give you the date or anything like that, but I was 6 weeks old and I was baptized in Glasgow. Having meetings in Glasgow many, many years later, it dawned on me that I was in the area where I was, in inverted commas, baptized. And I said to one of the brethren, I said, "I think it was just there." And I said, "I was 6 years old." And he says, "What was the place like in these days?" I said, "Well, I was only 6 weeks old, so I really don't remember very much about it." But nevertheless, that went on. And when the minister, Mr. Houston, left, another man came along who was not a believer. Now, I did a number of things in the church. As a matter of fact, I played the pipes. You'll be glad I haven't brought a demonstration pair with me tonight. But nonetheless, I played in the pipe band. And I started learning the pipes when I was about 11 or 12. And I was there until about 15. And I played in the pipe band. The very first time I played in a march, I was summoned one Sunday morning because a piper had taken ill. And I got on my gear, and when I went there, feeling very proud about the fact that I was going to play on the front rank as we marched up the road there, blowing our heads off and playing away at the pipes. But the pipe major soon deflated me. He says, Grant, he says, you're no very good, so I'm taking the reeds out of your pipe. Just blow. There's no sound comes out of it. So I did blow, and I twiggled my fingers and all that. And my wife still thinks that when I make a lot of noise, there's no much sound comes out of it, you know. But nevertheless, that was me piping, you know. And my favourite was that very well-known Scottish lament, The Flowers of the Forest, which was, of course, written due to the fact that the English did us a dreadful, dreadful disservice at the Battle of Flodden. But nevertheless, we won't blame you for that. And I was in the pipe, man. I also, because my father was, amongst other things, a church officer, I was the relief bell ringer as well. And I rang the bells when the official bell ringer couldn't make it. 10:45 they started, 10:55 they stopped, and you hit the bell at the second tick of the big pendulum, which I went away up, you know, and you pulled the lever. It wasn't very artistic, but there was a little status about it, you know, because you could keep it going, and there was a bit of, just to make sure it stopped exactly at 10:55. But as time went on, and I was interested in spiritual things, I then got a very exalted position in the church. I became the president of the youth fellowship. Now, there you are. You know, George Bush is about to have something in common with me. We're both ex-presidents. But his has more advantages in it than mine. And so I became the president. And I got the speakers. And do you know, I got all the women speakers I could get my hands on. I used to invite them along. And boy, they could preach, some of these women, I tell you. And they could thump. I remember one particularly, how should I put it? No, I better not say it that way. Certainly, she was of some considerable size, let us put it that way. And she could preach and jump about, and she dashed about, and she used to thump. There was a sort of pillow thing, thump in the little pulpit. And every time she thumped it, stour came up. You know what stour is off it. But I got all these preachers, you see, and all that kind of thing. And there we were, going along on that kind of stuff. The only teaching I got was that one of the church organist, who is a believer, used to take me up on a Friday night to the Bible Training Institute in Glasgow. The principal was a Mr. Macbeth, and I can remember one session we did the Epistle to the Ephesians and things like that, and that was a Friday night. In the actual church, there was none. There was no teaching of any kind. And although Mr. Houston used to take us up to his house in Bridge of Weir of a Friday evening, some of the youngsters, and I remember we had a look at the Epistle to the Philippians, but there was no real teaching of any nature. But I began to be a little concerned about some things. I was a little concerned, for instance, I was a little concerned about the fact that unbelievers were taking communion, as I called it in these days. And that concerned me a little. And I had also a running dispute with the minister of Paisley Abbey, because he used to come to the school in Paisley I went to. And I remember us teaching us one day that the opening chapters of the book of Genesis were a lovely fairy story, a lovely allegory. I remember speaking to him at the end of it, he said to me, you know, it was the fact, when you grow up, you'll know that what I say was true, you know. And that just didn't seem right to me. Now, that stuck in my mind. I couldn't quite understand why God would give us a fairy story. I really couldn't understand that. That was a difficulty to me. And nevertheless, we still carried on, and I still got the preachers. Half of them were women and half of them were men and all that kind of thing. And I hadn't the foggiest idea. I was absolutely ignorant of Scripture. I hadn't the foggiest idea. I had no right doing what I was doing because I was ignorant, and I had no right at all getting involved in booking speakers and all that kind of thing. But however, life went on because I didn't know anything better. My father used to take me to one of the big missions in Glasgow, the Tent Hall, which was a very large place, which was a great gospel work. And that would be of some Saturday evenings and that kind of thing. And that was the gospel, but again, no teaching. Absolutely no teaching whatsoever. And time moved on, and I became more and more anxious. And then when this minister came, who was not a believer, that created further problems. Very great problems, as a matter of fact. And it came really to a head. I, in my mind, somehow or other, had this idea that we should be able actually to believe what the Bible said. And I had that in my head, and I couldn't get it, and I couldn't really find anybody to agree with me. I was a one-off. I remember standing on the station platform at Bridge of Weir and saying to the organist, who was a believer, you know, is it not a fact that in the Bible they had communion more than every 3 months? Surely they had it nearly every week. And he said to me, well, John, you've got to understand, that was true in the Bible, but we've developed since then. And that was the argument. We've developed since then. Still didn't satisfy me. I still felt there was something not right about this. Well, the thing came to the head, really, 1958-59 session of the Youth Fellowship. The new minister called me in one day and said, one Sunday evening, into the vestry, you know, a very august place, you know. And he says, I want you to fill up these forms because I want the Youth Fellowship to join the Church Football League. And I said, well, why would I do that, Mr. Jones? Oh, and he gave me all the reasons. I said, no, I don't think I'll bother. So I left. He called me the next Sunday and said, did you fill up these forms? I said, no, I didn't. He says, well, I thought you might not, so I did. And the first game is a week on Friday at Port Glasgow. Now, this was the winter. Now, Port Glasgow, if you've lived there, please excuse us. Port Glasgow on a lovely, beautiful, sunny day is a very depressing place. A very, very depressing place. Get it on a dark winter evening, and it's not only depressing, it actually attacks you in some way. Because when you leave it, you can't get it out of your skin. Port Glasgow is, if you're going up our way, unless you come from Port Glasgow, in which case it's a lovely place, but just avoid it. So the first game was to be on this Friday evening, and I said, I'm not going, but he forced me, he compelled me to go. It'll surprise you to know I wasn't actually playing in it. Because football and, well, exercise of any kind, I never felt was healthy. As a matter of fact, I thought it was very unhealthy. And so I went down this Friday night. I was unhappy. I wasn't happy with the whole setup. I couldn't understand an unsaved man preaching. Because even I understood he wasn't saved. I understood that. And when you went into the vestry, it was stinking of smoke and all that kind of stuff. And I couldn't. Just didn't understand that. And I walked around the football pitch. And this is early 19, late 59, early 60. I walked around the football pitch. And I heard the swearing. And I saw the language. And walking around the football pitch, I made up my mind I was going to find, as I thought then, another church. This wasn't right. I was going to find another church. So I set out with that purpose, to find another church. I still fulfilled my youth fellowship duties as president until the end of the session, which would be the end of March of that, 1960. But I made up my mind I was going to find somewhere else. And so I set out to find somewhere else. It was quite a remarkable search, actually. I went everywhere. I went everywhere. Again, I was completely ignorant. I hadn't a clue. Somehow or other, through the muck, I knew what I was looking for, but I wasn't quite, I didn't really know what I was looking for. I was looking for what I thought was a real church without really understanding what that was. But I went anyway. I even went to the Seventh-day Adventists. I hadn't a clue who they were. I met one and he invited me on a Saturday night, and I went along to the Seventh-day Adventists. And you know, it was a strange thing. I left after 15 minutes. And I didn't know why. I just felt I shouldn't be there. That wasn't right either. And I now know why that was. That was the work of the Holy Spirit. And I left. And I tried everything. Oh, I went everywhere and tried everything. I even tried some other Church of Scotland places. And I kept going on about this and looking for this church without knowing really what I was looking for. Now, you might think, well, that's a strange thing. But I'm Scottish, you know, and maybe you think we are a wee bit strange. Looking for something and you don't know what you're looking for. But you just know that. I always felt that somehow or other when I find it, I'll know it. And eventually there was a chap I was very friendly with called Ronnie Sheridan. And he was in the church at that time. He didn't leave. And he said to me, what you're looking for, John, one night we were speaking about it. He says, what you're looking for is the gospel hall. And I said, well, where is there a gospel hall? He said, Kilmacombe. Now, I'd gone to school in Kilmacombe, primary school. And I said, where's the gospel hall in Kilmacombe? He says, well, if you go down by the post office there, go down that road, take first right, you'll see there's two brown doors. That's the Gospel Hall. There's no notice outside. Well, why would you want to put a notice outside, you know? There's no notice outside, and that's the Gospel Hall. I asked the brethren later on why there was no notice outside. And they said it was taken off during the war, because if Hitler invaded, they didn't want, that was his strategic aim, to capture the Gospel Hall in Kilmacock. And I remember, this would be 1960, I said to him, why have you not put a notice up since? And one of the brethren says, well, it's not been proved that he's dead yet. So they were just making sure if the German army came, it wouldn't know that that was the Gospel Hall. However, there was no notice, but I learned that was the Gospel Hall. So, I went one Sunday evening over, and I'm now in March, early March, 1960. I went over one Sunday night on my own to see what this Gospel Hall was. It wasn't very inviting. The two brown doors were open, first time I'd ever seen them open. And you have a wooden staircase, and the roof was leaking above that, by the way, as well as rain coming in the hall. And you go to the top of this little staircase, and I didn't know that behind me there was a kitchen which must take the prize for being the smallest kitchen in the UK. It was just a little cupboard of a kitchen. And then you went into the hall, it wasn't square, it had five walls, and it was so designed with pillars that wherever you sat, you'd look at that to see the platform, you know. And it was heated by a coal fire, and one of the brethren sat in front of the coal fire, crossed his legs, and everybody else was frozen. But he was enjoying it. His feet were nice and warm. And that was the Gospel Hall in Kilmacombe. And I sat down. There was a young man, some years older than me, at the door that evening, and he was giving out hymn books. I got to know him very well. I was the best man at his wedding. He was the best man at mine. And the Lord took him home to glory just in his mid-50s. And I sat down. And I can remember the night yet very clearly. And I just looked, and I was looking for the preacher. There was nobody who seemed to me to be the preacher. And there was maybe about 40 in fellowship in that assembly. Two of them got up on the platform. And the platform, you had to be careful because there was two windows just from there up at the platform. If you'd fallen over, you'd have gone through the window onto the street. You know, there was no barrier or anything up. There was just two windows. And they sat. And I remember even that night thinking, that's a dangerous place to be. If you pushed your chair back too far, you'd end up the pavement one story down. But know this. As soon as the meeting started, I remember thinking, this is it. This is it. There was something different. Something different. Now, I didn't know what was different. I hadn't a clue. I literally had no a clue. But it was something different. And the meeting went on, and just a gospel meeting. Well, that was good, because I understood that was the gospel. That was the gospel. And I understood that was the gospel. And so after the meeting, the young man said to me, would you like to come up to our house for supper? I thought, supper? You see, if my mother or father ever went to anybody for supper, which would be very rare, you took a present. And I had no present to take. I had nothing with me. And I said, well, I've got nothing with me. And he said, no, you don't need to come up. I remember I went to that house. It was a little council house. And Mr. and Mrs. Summers and their son Jim, and he had two sisters. And Mr. Summers was a plasterer. I would say they had a very small income. But I watched that night, and into that house there came about 30 young people and sat down. We sang some hymns. And then we had supper, and some supper it was. I now know, although it never dawned on me at the time, that that must have taken a considerable percentage of that man's wages, just to lay on that supper. Of course, being teenagers, we ate everything that was there. And we sat for supper, and then lo and behold, I can remember it, yeah, Jim then started a sub, and they started discussing the scriptures, and I sat mesmerized. I had never heard this in my life. I was stunned. I'm watching this one and this one. And some of them were younger than me. And then I remember at one stage, they turned, I remember very clearly, to the book of Haggai. I had a real problem finding it, but nevertheless, there it was. And at the end of that night, Jim Summers said to me, "Well, we will see you back again." Now, listen to the two questions I asked. I asked two questions. First question was, do you believe there actually was a man called Adam? He actually did exist. Yes. Right? They passed test number one. I believe they're getting back to basics, Genesis 1, you know. Secondly, do you actually believe there was a place called the Garden of Eden? Yes. I said, I'll come back next week then. That was it. As far as I can, I had actually found believers who believed the Bible. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. Now, I went back to that place on a number of occasions. Well, every Sunday, really, every Sunday night after that, I used to go over there. And I got to know them very well, the Summers family. And Jim, of course. And I now know that he was, I mean, I can remember sitting down one night and a chap came and sat beside me and he said to me, "Where were you last night?" Well, I had been at the Tent Hall in Glasgow, the mission. And, he absolutely chewed me up and threw me out. And I hadn't a clue what he was talking about. And he told me, "Well, where you've been, that's worse than going here and worse than going there. That's a terrible thing, you know." But I wasn't an assembly fellow. I didn't know what he was talking about. And I remember Jim came and said to him, "Archie, can I have a word with you?" And he took him out. Now, you see, I learned a lesson there, that the truth of the assembly, you know, has got to be taught, but there's got to be wisdom in how you teach it. You know, very much so, wisdom in how you teach it. And that family taught me, without ever once saying to me, "You will not do that." What they taught me was, this is what you should do. And once you get that into your head, the other things just melt away. They just melt away. And you don't stop going to places and still have a longing for them. You found something better. Something better in the assembly. Well, the time went on that summer, and eventually I plucked up courage to say to the brethren, now I can remember the night I did it, I wanted to join the gospel hall. Now I've often wondered whether they thought, did I want to get super glue and join myself to it? But I wanted to join the gospel hall, this mysterious place with the two brown doors. And the night came, because the night came, and it was a night where there was a Bible reading. Now, you got to watch expressions. Always watch expressions. I can remember being absolutely puzzled when I was asked to a Bible reading where for an hour they were going to read six verses. I thought, how can you pass an hour reading six verses? And I thought there must be, you must sit in a circle and read it, and then read it. And my big worry was, what verse would I get to read? Would it be one of these with funny names in it and all that kind of stuff? So you see, we sat, and I was faced by these august men. To my mind, there was none of them under 90. There's one of them still alive. He was 46 at that time, believe it or not. I thought he was an old man. Angus MacLeod, he's now over 90, he's still alive. And he remembers that night where I sat in front of them. And I should have said this, that when I was in the Church of Scotland, I got myself baptized. Now, that didn't go down well with them. I had come across the truth of baptism. And I went to a place in Paisley, which would be all pretty well like an assembly. I didn't know about assembly. I think about now, they had a plurality of elders. They broke bread, they baptized, they broke bread every Lord's Day, etc. They had a plurality of elders. I understand now that one of them was the kind of leading one. But nevertheless, I hadn't. I went to be baptized, and I gave my testimony, and you got a queer grilling. I can tell you about that. And I was baptized. So, I was baptized. And that didn't go down well with the minister when I was baptized. But nevertheless, here I was, and I was sitting in front of these men. And I remember this day, I told them why I would like to come into the gospel hall, fellowship. And one of them looked at me and said, "Is it your own exercise?" Oh, that stunned me. I thought, I didn't know you to do exercises to come here. You know, what exercises have you got to do? You know, now I'm not one for exercise. If folks say, "Do you exercise?" I said, "I breathe regularly." You know, but when he said, "Is it your own exercise?" I thought I'd failed. Because I thought, if I say yes, that might not be right. If I say, so I said, "I don't know." I don't know. Because I didn't know what he meant. Is it your own exercise? Got to watch. The very first conference I went to with Jim, we went to pick up somebody else. And the father of the house said to me, and I remember it clearly, "Art thou going to the conference?" I thought, you must speak like that. So I said, "I art." Because I didn't know the lie. I thought there was a kind of language, you know. So I said, "I art, yes." You know. Well, he did say, "Art thou going to the conference?" So I thought, this must be it. However, here we are. But let me tell you a little bit before that. How did I learn some of the truths about the assembly? You know, one of the main lessons I had was one Sunday night when all the others had gone and I was still sitting with the Summers, and Peter Summers was out bringing in coal. It was a coal fire they had, and I was sitting with his wife, and his wife said to me, Mrs. Summers said, "John, have you ever thought about 1 Corinthians 11 I said, "Well, no really, what's 1 Corinthians 11 she says, "Let me tell you." And she took the Bible and she taught me the truth of 1 Corinthians 11. That's why I read from the book of the Acts. You know, Apollos, he was taught the way of God more perfectly. And it was the man and his wife. Now, my brother and sister, she would never have stood in a platform and preached. But there was absolutely nothing wrong with what she did that night. And she opened the scriptures and she taught me the truth of 1 Corinthians 11. I suppose I have a deep regret in that. When I think of what I owe to that family now, and really, they went to heaven before I was mature enough to thank them properly. And that really is something I've often thought about. I never really did thank them properly, because when you're that age, you don't understand. It's only when you look back, you understand what they did for you. If you've got young people coming about the house who are not an assembly fellow, just deal gently with them. You know, as I say, they never once said to me, "Better to stop that." What they did say is, "Look, why don't you come here and listen to that? Why don't you do that?" And it wasn't arguing into assembly position. It was being attracted into assembly position. And that was the great thing. It was a case of being attracted. So I came into it. I broke bread for the first time on the first Lord's Day of October 1960. Now, you're going to say, "What age were you then?" Well, I'm not going to tell you. I think I've probably slipped it out. Well, I'll tell you, I was 18. No, I'm not going to tell you. And then I want to just speak a little about assembly life. It was all very strange to me at first. But you know, in these early days, when you go to listen to preachers now, and we kind of grade them, you know, grade this, grade that. When I went in these days, everything was fantastic. I had never heard anything like this before. I had never heard it in my life. If I'm speaking to somebody and you're not in assembly fellowship, just say this: you don't know what you're missing. You don't know what you're missing. It's the very best place to be. Now, believe me, because I've been elsewhere, it's the very best place to be. And sometimes we speak about the faults and the flaws, and of course they're there. And they will be there till we all go to the glory. But having looked at all that, it's still the very best place to be. It really is the truth of the local assembly. And Jim Summers taught me that. Now, he would only have been about 24 or 25, but he taught me that. He did. He taught me well, and he took me to the right places. Sometimes, some of you know, one Saturday, looking for meetings, I went to a place in Paisley first to hear Mr. William Friel, who used to be an evangelist amongst us. And then in the evening, I went to a place called Cemetery Road Halfway. to hear a Mr. Yue. I didn't know who either of them were. But I maybe shouldn't say, I had a jacket at that time. And it was light blue and white squares or grey squares. And it was interwoven with lurex thread. Now, with suede shoes, cavalry twills, and a suede tie, I thought I was the cat's pyjamas. I really thought I was. Now, you couldn't translate that in another language, but you know what I mean. I don't know what the cat's pyjamas would be in Spanish, but I know what it is in Scotland. I thought I was the scout, you know, and I got all dressed up in this gear, and I shone like the sun, you know, shone like the sun. And I got all dressed up in this gear, and I got away with it at Paisley, but when I went up the cemetery road halfway, the brightest colour in there was dark brown, you know. That was the highlight, you know. The brightest colour was dark brown. It was an old hall, cemetery road. You know, for a minute when I first looked at it, I thought, that was the cemetery, you know. That's why it's called Cemetery Road, because of this hall. And some of you might know of I.Y. Ewing. I hadn't a clue who he was or anything. But I got a great welcome. Everybody glared at me. Wondered what this apparition was walking in, you know. You know. And I'm quite sure some of them, as they looked at me, had to shield their eyes. It was the brightest thing they had seen in their lifetime, you know. Me walking in with all this stuff on. And I sat down, and I listened. I.Y. Ewing, he spoke in Daniel chapter number 1, and at the end, he came down the hall, and he stopped. And I was in the back seat, and he came over, and he said to me, "What's your name, young man?" "John Grant, Mr. Ewing." "And are you in Assembly Fellowship?" I said, "I am." And then he said something that I thought, how does he know that? I thought, he must be a tremendous mind. Because he said to me, "In Assembly, I am Mr. Young." I says, "But not for very long." Now, how did he know? Not for very long. Could you maybe help me in that one? How did he know? Was it my suede shoes or my sparkling jacket? Or my suede tie? Was it, what was it? I don't know. How, somehow or other, he discerned that I hadn't been long in. But you know what he did? He gave me a lovely little word of encouragement. He did. He gave me a lovely... And you know, once he spoke to me, it was all right to speak to this thing in the corner. You know? So others could speak to me as well. There we are. My time's almost gone. So it's not an astounding story. But you know, it's long taught me, and let me say it again, that we don't argue people into truth. We attract people into truth. And that's what that family in Kilmacombe did to me. When I think now, as I say, he worked for a local, little local company. He was a slater and plasterer. And when I think of that table every Sunday night, it must have really meant something to them to spread a table like that. It really must. I tell you, there'll be a reward at the judgment seat for that kind of thing. There will be. And I was attracted in. And we broke bread, as I say, on the first Lord's Day of October 1960. And it was just before then I met my wife. She's with us tonight. I'm pleased to see. And she's not older than me, but she was an Assembly Fellowship before me. Let me put it that way. So looking back over these years, we're thankful to the Lord for that. And again, if there's anybody here tonight, or if you know anybody who's just in the same situation, just invite them along and just show them that this is something different. It's something where the Bible is believed and there's no ifs and buts. It's clear and plain. That was what struck me. There was no arguing. And then I heard some of these speakers. Oh, it was amazing to sit and listen to that. Just to listen to that truth. And I tell you, I want to tell you this. If you're not in Assembly Fellowship, if I had never found the Assembly, my life would have been poorer. My life has been enriched in the lovely brethren and sisters we've met and the fellowship we've enjoyed. I want to tell you, if I'd gone anywhere else, I would never have found that. Never have found it. But the fellowship of the saints and just the joy of being with saints and of remembering the Lord is something that is really of value. Let us not forget, in getting used to it all, just how special it all is. It is special. And Well, just thank the Lord. Because looking back, you can see what you didn't see at the time. You can see the hand of the Lord opening doors and closing doors. And praise God, He really has led all the way.